Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Schinkel, President of Unique Training and Development and Frontline Leadership Systems. And this episode is brought to you by our LEAP program. That's Leadership Excellence Application Program. It's a nice follow-up reinforcement system to the live training that we do for supervisors, managers, and team leaders. And of course, you can check us out at uniquedevelopment.com. Remember that our mandate here at the AOP podcast is really to help you accelerate some of the results that you're getting on various projects and initiatives, to also help you in your own professional growth and your personal growth. And today's guest is actually a member of the Unique Training and Development faculty, Bob Parker. And I've known Bob for 22 years. We've both been members of the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers. He was a national president. I was a national president. So he's been a collaborator for a long time. And Bob is the founder of something called the Pit Crew Challenge. And we, of course, have sold the Pit Crew Challenge to some of our clients. It's one of these unforgettable learning experiences for executives and other high-performing teams. Now, I want to do Bob justice, so I am going to read the introduction to make sure I don't mess anything up. So today we're exploring the power of experiential learning with Bob Parker. Bob is a speaker, trainer, facilitator, and consultant who specializes in helping organizations build strong cultures. He believes that a lesson discovered is a lesson remembered. And he's developed some incredibly innovative programs like the Pit Crew Challenge experience that get people out of their seats and truly engaged. He's partnered with some of the top executive education providers in the world, is now an executive fellow at the Iacocca Institute at Lehigh University. And if that's not enough, he, like myself, is a certified speaking professional, which for those who may not know, is the highest earned designation of the professional speaking industry held by less than 15% of international members. I'm thrilled to have him join us. So welcome to the podcast, Bob.
Thanks for having me, Greg. Great to be here.
Well, I'm excited that you're here. You've been on my list to have as a guest, and we like to rotate some of our own faculty members into the podcast. By the way, if you need to connect with Bob or you're curious about this thing called the Pit Crew Challenge, he's got some great stuff on his website, pitcrew.ca. And of course, Bob's on LinkedIn as well. Bob, one of the things I think it's good, even though I know the origin story, I think it would be cool for you to share how Pit Crew even came to be. Like, it's one of those things where you collaborated and co-created it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I don't have enough time to tell the full story, but I could give you the quick version. You know, we've just come off of the Daytona 500, was on Sunday. And if I go back far enough to remember myself as a child, Dad would come in on a Sunday. Of course, the TV was his. So if you wanted to watch something on TV, you first of all got out of his chair that you were sitting in as a kid and handed him all the remotes. And then Dad sat down and turned on the racing. And I'd say, oh, Dad, do we have to watch racing? You know, not a big fan. But my brother liked it and Dad liked it. So I got to see a lot of racing when I was a kid. You know, fast forward 25 years as a management consultant, working with a client on some specific issues around teaming and around culture, we came up with an idea of doing some training, and we thought of a sports analogy. We started kicking around analogies around sport to kind of give it an experiential thought, but we weren't really thinking about doing the experience until, of course, this idea came into my head from being a kid sitting in front of the TV thinking, well, what if we actually brought a race car in? And why don't we call it Pit Crew Training? And we'll bring a car in and we'll have the participants really become the NASCAR Pit Crew. And then we'll use that as the kickoff for all the other training that we're going to do. And we can use it as a callback to say, hey, a couple weeks later, hey, remember when we were around their car and this happened, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the client loved the idea. I had never done anything like it in my entire life. And he said, let's make it happen. So we found a race team, a local race team, and Bob's your uncle. there's how it happened. The first program went very, very well. I like to joke because, you know, facilitator, of many, many years, you know, over 30 years in this business and a skilled facilitator, you know, my first debrief question was, so what happened? I really didn't have much. It has since changed. I still ask what happened, but I ask it in a more more specific way, and the program did well. So after that first one, you think, well, you know, good and done. But fortunately, it was back in 2001, we had that thing called the World Wide Web, and I had a website, and I threw some things on my website. And about 6 weeks later, I got an email from the Fuqua School of Business, Duke Corporate Education in Durham, North Carolina, and they were interested in working with us. And what was great about that is they had the same idea at the same time. They're in the heartland of NASCAR, and the joke is that they actually picked up the phone and called, you know, Dale Earnhardt, not Junior, by the way. They called Jeff Gordon and said, would you guys help us out? Because those are the local race guys. And you think back now, you kind of laugh at that. Of course, well, I laughed at that when they called me and yeah. said we wanted to use them. But they said, hey, you're a management consultant. You speak our language. And I said, I do. And then you have a race car. Would you be willing to work with us? And a real race team. One of the great things about the race team that I work with, RKR Motorsports, they actually race. They are on the weekends, they're racing. And during the week, they're working with me on Pickford. So we had a great relationship with Duke Corporate Education moving forward. And that's where I really, really got to develop Pickford and how it came to be a world-class program.
As you can see, what one of the secrets to Bob's success is he brings this pit crew challenge experience into a much larger program that, say, a corporate education group is doing. In our case, it's a feature of some of the content we deliver for some of our clients. The odd time, a client will just buy the pit crew experience just for executive development or as part of a retreat. But usually it isn't done just as its own standalone. It's usually part of a longer meeting or some other group. So, by the way, I do want to, I just checked, Bob, that in the studio, Suzanne made sure that we actually have a copy of your book. So it's called The Pit Crew Challenge, Winning Customers Through Teaming. And it really does a great job of illustrating a lot of the lessons. Bob, I think what people maybe need is for you to, because they're not going to see the video till they go to the website, which is pitcrew.ca, can you just tell them kind of what the experience entails? Just walk them through a few of the features of it?
Absolutely. So essentially, we'll get a decent-sized group, a classroom-size group of people. That's you know, our sweet spot's, you know, we say 28. That gives us four teams of seven people on a team. And when we created this, there was seven people allowed to change the tires and put the gas in back in 2001. That's since changed over the years. But we thought seven's a good number. As few as five can do it. But we can do a group from anywhere from eight people, you know, all the way up into the 40s, even the 50s. We prefer not to. We'd like to keep the classroom size a little lower. But in that sort of 28 range is pretty sweet. We'll break people up into groups, up into different teams, and we'll give them the safety demonstration. Here's how you change a tire on a race car. And we really don't care what people's experiences are. Most people we get have not used the equipment before. Even if they have used the equipment, please listen to what we're going to share with you on how to use it. Those that usually have used it are not using it properly or not using it in a way that's meaningful on a pit crew. So we give you all the safety training that you need to have. It's not difficult to change a tire on a car. Just the challenge is trying to do it as quickly as you can with a group of six other people if you're on that team.
I want to help people understand that there is an actual race car.
It drives, and
it's not going usually around a track, although you have done that at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But the reality is that the car kind of comes in from maybe 20 or 30 feet away. It drives into this pit area. The car is running. There's real compressed air impact wrenches. You make that cool sound. Yep. And so people are actually near a running race car, and they're actually using equipment to change the tires on it. And so set the stage even from there then. So as these teams, what do you normally see happen?
So the teams just naturally, you know, get into a very competitive sort of element. They you're trying to do the best that they can. But you know, ultimately they're going to make some mistakes, but that's okay. The great thing about experiential learning, and also being in a metaphor, it allows adults to make mistakes and be okay with it. And because when they get the coaching afterwards, say, here's some different ideas of what you could do instead, they're amiable to it because they're aware of, hey, I could do this better, or I'd only done this once, et cetera. So it relieves the ego, which we find ourselves in all sorts of training. It doesn't matter what the training is. A lot of people bring their egos to the classroom. Oh, I've done this. I don't need to be here. I know what I'm talking about. And when we're trying to get everyone on the same page so that we can be a high-performing culture, egos have to leave the room. So the experience gives people the opportunity to do that. So once they change the tires, you know, they get to watch all the other teams do it. And there's a lot of entertainment value in watching somebody do something, and then you know you've got to go do it. So the adrenaline level is really high. That is what we rely on. You need adrenaline to learn. Without it, no learning is happening. So when we pump some adrenaline into you and a little bit of dopamine, because, hey, you finished it, you got it done, the car does leave the pit at the end, we've set you up in a very good place to then be able to share some of the learnings that come through Pick Room.
Right. And we don't want to give away too many of the learnings, but right. One of the things, like Bob mentioned, is in the absence of understanding a common goal, people assume there's competitiveness. And you see that in businesses where one division or one department is essentially in competition with another instead of collaborating together to win the customer. So, at first you kind of stumbled into experiential learning just with this co-creation, but now you're a huge proponent of it. And what is the magic of learning through an experience in general?
I think the real magic has been interesting. I was having a conversation this morning in the grocery store, right into a neighbor. And we're talking about what happened. If you look back about what happened in 2020, when, you know, most training went virtual, and even with unique development, a lot of training went virtual very, very quickly. Clients had demand for training. And that satisfied a real need at the time, and is what we had to do. But quickly people began to realize that virtual isn't necessarily the best scenario for all training. It's good for things that I need right now, quick information, and of course when localities become an issue, there's a lot of opportunity for that. But one of the things that is different about experiential learning is there's a difference between being childlike and being childish. Adults do not mind being childlike, but they do not want to be childish. So play is the big element that comes into it. An adult will certainly sit down with a child and play with their Legos with the child, mm-hmm. and have no problem. It doesn't affect my ego at all. But if I now have to start acting childish, then ego starts to play in a little bit, especially.
That's what starts to slow the learning, right? So the ego becomes a barrier to the learning because I'm worried what other people think of me, or I feel silly. Whereas childlike means we're kind of playing together and we're learning as a result of that play. And I think people can relate to that, because sometimes people will sit through a traditional leadership session, and the instructor may initiate a game of some kind, and the person feels like it's just silly, and they question, you know, what impact it has or how it relates to their work or something. And again, I think you've said it, one of the magics of things about Pit Crew is that some people may be racing fans, they may even think of themselves as being interested in Pit Crew or pit changes and so forth, but there's usually not a lot of extra knowledge, and if anything, the knowledge is false or misleading. So I just wondered about this idea of it being a metaphor. It can't be just practicing work stuff, but it's got to relate to the work. I don't know if I took this off track there, but you were talking just around this issue of play, but it's sort of relevant play that they could relate it back to their work.
Yes, the result of the play has to lead back to the thing that I need to learn at the end of the day, right? There has to be a connection for it, even if it's metaphorical, right? But you do have to talk about it. It's not just we're going to play and then we're not going to talk about it. And this is why it's important, as you mentioned earlier, how we tend to come in on programs that are a little bit longer, maybe a 2-day or a 3-day program. We tend not to come in just to pick, crew, and leave. We don't recommend that, actually. If we do come in, have something else in the afternoon. Talk it through. We do plenty of talking during pick crew. But now that once we've done the picker experience, now you got to go back and say, okay, now how does this apply to our business? And how do some of those concepts impact us more and other ones maybe not so much? And then what are we going to do differently moving forward? But the great thing about play is it's a great equalizer. It puts everyone on the same plane very, very quickly. And it removes ego very, very quickly. And as a result, people are open to sharing ideas that they may not have been willing to share prior. In other words, ideas that they'll hold back and try to think it through before I'm prepared to share the idea. When you don't really know much about something and you're in play mode, you'll throw out all sorts of ideas. What if we did this? What if we did that? What if we did this? And you're more amenable to it. So when I created Pit Crew, I had nothing to lose. So ego wasn't in play. What if we did this? And what if is the great question. What if? And then being able to say, okay, well, let's try it. We've got nothing to lose by trying it. And oftentimes when I'm doing some of Unique's training, when we talk about onboarding and training new employees, I'll say, give your employees the opportunity to make mistakes. But have a budget for it. Of course, no, we're not going to let you pour that $1 million batch into there yet. But you could do the $10 batch, right? Maybe even the $100 batch until we've got a sense of it. But try it and mess it up, because some of it's going to fall on the floor, and we got to expect that that's what's going to happen. And that happens in Pit Crew. People make mistakes, and it's designed for them to make the mistakes so that they their minds open and they have those aha moments. Because once they get the aha moment, a lesson discovered, you know, is that lesson remembered or that lesson learned, and they'll never forget it.
People, I will say that it amazed me, although I've seen it and I'm still wowed by the program, even though I've actually helped to facilitate it for a couple of your projects. Yeah. But what's neat is to some degree how predictable, you know, the reactions are and the traps that people fall in, which shows you how great a design it is. And then the other thing, though, I'd say is, although the learnings from the facilitation are excellent, which is another thing to remember, because companies will go and they'll do like a ropes or they'll do some outdoor things, or maybe even, you know, go golfing as a team. But, you know, when you think of them, yeah, they're activities. It is loose. It's sort of out of the workplace. But the learning that gets pulled from it is where the facilitation magic. But one thing I'd say, because I've seen you debrief it, which is way better than when I debriefed it, but it's like you don't ram down their throats what their key takeaways are. They take it away, and then they keep talking about it, you know, internally, as opposed to you telling them, okay, here's your 5 action items because of this. They've learned them at such an emotional, visceral level. They just don't forget about them.
Yeah, you're right. There is so much there, and it doesn't matter. Like, if I gave you the 12 key points, you don't even have to remember all 12. I don't number anything, and I don't have an acronym. Acronyms sometimes are not easily remembered, although in Unique's training, you have my 2 favorite acronyms, which are bet and beer. So I can wrap my head around those ones. People will remember the impact. They'll remember the story that comes with it. So what happens in Pit Crew is the story happens to them, and then they tell that story to somebody else. And in my mind, there is nothing more impactful than you living your story and you telling that story. You know, something happens to you in your life, and then you get those dinner invites, and they say, hey, Greg, tell everyone about the time when. We all want to hear it from you again. And you get in and you tell the story, and everyone's doing their giggling or whatever it is to the story. People want to have those stories that they can share. And experiential learning allows them to have a story. It is far more difficult to have a story if you've just sat and read through a manual. And that's not to suggest that you don't have... There's times where you got to read through the manual. You got to know this, and then this is how this works, and this is how this works. And when you can add the experience element to it and then bring back in the manual stuff, or the stuff that's in the manual, then people start to make the connections, and the connections become much stronger. And people are more willing to learn when their mind is open.
So you've done, you've been around some of the world's best leadership training and development, right? So, and by the way, the Pit Crew Challenge at one point was one of the, was actually the top rated activity through Duke Corporate Education, and Duke was at that point rated as the top provider worldwide. So I was used to, you know, positively
feed Bob
and say that Bob had the best experiential learning program in the world. Right?
Thanks, Frank. I appreciate that. That's a great way to respect that.
We'll just take that snippet and that'll be your testimonial.
Right.
So having seen a lot of leadership training, and you teach our leadership training, is what is it that, even beyond just thinking about experiential learning, what kinds of broader lessons have you picked up around leadership development or how people learn that might be helpful for our listeners to hear?
Well, I was reading an article just the other day by a colleague who I knew through Duke, who has since moved on into other consulting companies. And we talked about something called action learning. And action learning has, for a lot of organizations, they've stepped away from it. Whereas, you know, he's still a bit of a proponent. So I just wanted to touch on it for a second. What is action learning? So action learning is the group of leaders or managers or executives create projects. And those projects are things that they'll get together on a team and they'll try to implement some sort of project within the organization. Now, it may never actually come to surface, but they'll do all the planning around it, get all the analysis, talk it all through, present it in front of their seniors at some point as part of the learning program. So what happens is we take you through a week of learning. Pit Crew might be a part of it, but in that you've got a project, right? And there'll be four or five different teams all working on separate projects. What they've learned about action learning is so few of those projects actually ever get implemented. In fact, the question is whether there's a valuable use of time for those executives to actually do the work. Now, to my colleague, and I would agree as well, the time spent on the project is experiential learning, right? Where it's okay to make mistakes, it's okay to take risks.
Like a dress rehearsal.
It's like a dress rehearsal. You can try something.
Stakes,
the not
there are
middle.
Stakes. There are stakes, but the stakes aren't really super high because you're not betting the company. But you're simulating making some decisions in which you are going to have some stakes. And there's just stakes because you're working with your colleagues on something.
Right. The difference is, ultimately, is, and where I think where a lot of organizations have stepped away from it is because people knew the stakes weren't so high, and because they knew this project may never be implemented, they didn't see it as a priority in their work that they did. And so it got lower priority in the effort that people put in, and the quality of the action learning projects weren't there to be able to implement. And so what we've seen is the trend is that action learning has seen a drop off in some organizations. My colleague would still like to say, hey, there's value in the experience, right? And I think that's what's really, really important to understand. But what we've got to do is show people where they have the permission to actually implement some stuff and actually make it work. I know, Greg, I know you did some action learning aspects where people had to fill a report, say, here's the thing I'm going to actually go do. But it was more of an individual, here's the task I'm going to go and change and maybe different in my facility. And that's action learning. But I'm still good with action learning, but what we have to take into consideration is how vested are people in the training and in the learning and wanting to do that project. So ultimately it comes down to the rewards and metrics of everything. And that's how everything is driven. It's, we talk about it in Pit Crew, of course. But if I'm working on this project, and there's no extra reward for me at the end of the day for completing it, is it getting done? Right? Are the leaves getting out of the eaves troughs if there's no reward for you not getting it done? If you know your eaves troughs are going to fall off because they're going to freeze up in the winter or whatever, there's a motivation to to not have to spend the extra money, and you'll take the leaves out of the eavesdrop. But that's where human behavior is. We will put our energies towards things that are important for us and that will help move us forward. So we've got to make sure that that's part of our training as well, is that people are buying into the training. And that's the training that they need and they feel that they need.
I would agree. And, you know, a lot of the people who would, you know, because they're usually frontline, either lead hands, team leaders or supervisors in our course, which again, you teach for us, is they're there because they were told to come. And so obviously someone saw the need to maybe upgrade the skills of the people because maybe they've been promoted from within. But because they don't even sometimes realize that they're not doing well, they don't know why there's a need to get better at it. You know, we try to win them over with the practicality and the relevancy of the content. But one of the things going through my mind, and you and I are both part of an industry, the speaking, training, development industry. And what I see is that, you know, we definitely have won companies over into realizing the value of spending some money and some time on development. So it's become like, you should really do this, right? But I still think that most of us are delivering in a topic, soft skills. And then over on the other side are the lean manufacturing, the operational excellence stuff, the automation, the technology, the, you know, increasing productivity. And I think that the day will come, I'm hoping, we're hoping to play a part in this, is where the two get melded together a little bit better. So I'm not just learning about communications. I actually have to improve my interactions related to performance. And so doing it this way gets me better numbers, better outcomes, and so forth. But I wasn't sure. Like it's harder because we do still tend to see training, even education, is really by subject and by topic. And it's not necessarily about how you might use that. I didn't know whether you have a take on that yourself.
Yeah, you know, this is great. I wish we all need to get together in the educational world for sure. And I've always thought, I'm glad you brought this up because it's something I've thought about many, many times. And this may sound strange, but this is certainly how I think. In our educational system, particularly in North America, it is very siloed, right? Math at 1 o'clock, and then you go off and do English, and then it's gym or it's science, and then some other topic. And I've always felt there's been integrations between every single discipline in school. And I would love to see a school do something like today's topic is squares, right, or circles. And you start in the morning, it's math, and you're going to do the math of squares, right? And then when you get into science, you're going to get into the science. We're talking about squares with respect to science. And then when you get into gym, we're talking about squares and how that, you know, how the different sports are about squares or whatever, square dancing or whatever it is. But the whole day, English is going to be about squares. And by the time you're done, you've seen squares from every single perspective in our educational system. Yeah. You'll know squares, and you'll know why you study math and to understand the geometry of it, et cetera, et cetera. And then the next day, it's going to be flowers, right? And then it's so science of flowers, the geometry of flowers, the Fibonacci code, and like they get into all these sorts of things, right? Yeah. From a learning perspective, I think as a child, that's far more fascinating to make the connections between things. But to your point, we get caught up on topic. And I'm at work, and I don't know that the problem I'm having right now is this topic. I don't necessarily know that because I can't necessarily fit, but I do know I've got a problem. Yeah. But I don't know, is that a science problem? Is that a math problem? Is that an English problem? Or is that a human relations problem? It's probably all of them.
Probably right? A lot of them, right? So you're really advocating through learning is multidisciplinary, which is why when you're playing or experiencing or just going through life, you have these lessons that are presented to you often in the form of problems and then consequences of the choices that you made. And then you learn from that and you try to do better next time. And you're just saying, if we could somehow make that part of the learning so that there is this opportunity, as we're playing around with this idea of leadership and operational excellence, you know, mashing together, kind of like you do with Pit Crew, you almost need to spend a minimal amount of time up front and put them in a scenario and see how they're performing and then see, help them realize that how they did that wasn't maybe as good as it could have been. Learn from it, teach them a little bit of how to do it better. It's sort of the same reason why we go to YouTube when we need to fix something. It's because, you know, I recently had to like fix a mirror. I had to cut a different hole in the mirror. So, of course, I'm YouTubing. How do you cut a hole in the mirror properly, you know, without breaking the whole thing? As it turns out, by the way, YouTube did not give me my PhD, and I'm still getting a quote on a new mirror. They didn't break the mirror, but I lost my confidence in my ability to cut this hole in the mirror. But these are things like, I needed to find this out, so I wanted to learn more about it. And I mean, you do it so beautifully through Pit Crew, and I just think there's this opportunity. So this is like a call to action of all of us who are in the business of learning and talent development, is to think about the pathway. We know a PowerPoint slide by itself will not really do a lot, and it's information. And I think a lot of people think my job is to convey information. Your job is to facilitate learning. Learning is a discovery process. So you've got to create that situation where people want to learn and want to do something with what they learn. So again, we're talking with Bob Parker, who is the founder of the Pit Crew Challenge. And of course, you can connect with Bob at pitcrew.ca is the website. You've got to see some of the videos. We don't want to give too much away. And you don't want to give too much away if you're going to bring in Pit Crew in your organization, because this wonderment of awe as people approach an actual race car is just something that's unbeatable. It's unforgettable. So Bob, as we're getting close to the end of our time together, I wasn't sure if there was something maybe that you'd wanted to share that I didn't ask about, or whether you think that we covered everything that you wanted to discuss.
I'd like to add one other last part, just to kind of finish up the conversation we're having around the learning part. And the learning really does come around failure, and it's permission to fail. And it's giving yourself permission to fail and feeling that you have permission to fail. And those are two different things. So it's permission from others and it's permission from yourself. And I think in a lot of training, we don't feel we have it, because a lot of times we're sent to training to get better, or we feel that we've been sent to training because we maybe have been failing, and I'm going to prove to you that I haven't been failing or I haven't been doing it wrong. And the thing is, no, both training is a gift. It's, here's an opportunity for you to get better at what you're doing. We think you're doing great. Here's an opportunity for you to get better. But at the same time, when you get better, you're going to make some more mistakes. And we want you to feel good about that. Because if you're willing to make the mistake, you're willing to learn from it. Improv training is, for people who do improv, one of the key elements of improv, it's yes and. And it's whatever the other person says is you're just supposed to take it, and you're supposed to go with whatever it is they say. You'll never watch improv and have someone say, no, that's wrong. You shouldn't have said that. But you've messed up the whole scene. No. Yes. Mm-hmm. And here's where I'm going to go with it. And if we have more of that idea in the workplace, that workplace is improv, because as you like to say, Greg, are we making it up a lot of the times? We sure are. And yes, and I hear what you're saying, so it's listening. I hear what you're saying, and here's my contribution to it. At the end of the day, the improv might go terrible. We've all seen some bad SNLs. But at the end of the day, some improvs can go great, and it can be some of the best results you'll ever
magic.
See.
Yeah, it's magic when it happens. So I think what you're saying is, because all learning has an element of failure and learning from it, and we know that in life, the failures are the ones that teach you the hardest lessons, but the lasting lessons, right, is that giving people a chance to fail in a learning way just helps accelerate what naturally is going on in your organization anyway. I mean, there's failures happening all the time. I once used to maybe make managers and executives a little nervous, because I'd say, you only see a fraction of the mistakes that are happening in the organization, because most of them are just buried in the process. The people understand, though, some of their failures, and we want to equip them with what they need to be more successful. So we've been talking with Bob Parker. Bob, thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I appreciate our friendship and collaboration over the years as well.
I do as well. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So again, if you want to reach Bob, you can do that at his website, pitcrew.ca. He also does excellent leadership training through us as well. So what I want to leave you with as we wrap up the podcast is, remember that if you need to develop your frontline leaders or your plant managers, executive team, we're here to help you through the frontline leadership training, management development, and site leadership programs. And of course, that all starts with a conversation at our website at uniquedevelopment.com. For now, I'll simply wish you well on your leadership journey.